Alaska's parochial position, we have some issues that we have to resolve, and this would be a great vehicle to do that.
Alaska's stake in national immigration reform. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, January 28th. Good evening, I'm Laurie Townsend. Also tonight, McDonald's turns to Alaskan pollock to help change its image.
Customers are increasingly interested in knowing where their food comes from and also understanding what a business does to be a responsible corporate citizen.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Kinnick Arm Crossing will connect Anchorage to the Mat-Su Valley. The bridge is intended to create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and save freight costs for Alaska's interior and North Slope. More information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
A bipartisan group of senators is laying out the framework for an overhaul of the nation's immigration status. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, Alaska's senators are welcoming the movement.
Alaska's share of the nation's 11 million undocumented immigrants is relatively small. The Pew Research Center estimates there are fewer than 10,000 illegal immigrants in the state. That's less than 1.5% of the state's workforce. Senator Mark Begich is confident they'll soon be on the path to living in the country without fear of deportation.
You have 8 Democrats, Republicans, 4 of each, pretty cross-section of folks in that group that are supporting a concept, which I think is a good sign. That's a good sign for us.
That concept is the most recent plan to overhaul the nation's immigration system. There is no bill just yet. That's still at least a month away. But it's a blueprint that's getting some positive reviews on Capitol Hill, if for no other reason than the bipartisan nature of it. It lays out a path to citizenship for those currently living in the country illegally, but only after increased border enforcement is put in place. It would require any immigrant to learn English to qualify for permanent resident status, and, among other things, would stiffen penalties for employers who knowingly hire undocumented workers. The government would require an online verification system. Senator Begich says it's a good starting point.
From Alaska's parochial position, we have some issues that we have to resolve, and this would be a great vehicle to do that.
Namely, retooling the J-1 visa program that allowed foreign students to work in Alaska's fisheries until the State Department removed the state's processing plants from the program in November. Senator Lisa Murkowski says she has not seen the plan, so she can't comment on any specifics. But she welcomes the progress, even if this is the first step.
I like the fact that there is clearly a very real effort to be addressing the issue. And it is an effort that goes just beyond an administration proposal.
This is not the first real effort, though. Congress has attempted to change immigration policy as recently as 2010. That program would have allowed students who came to the country illegally as children the chance to enroll in college as in-state students. It failed. Arizona Senator John McCain says there is one key difference between America in 2013 and the America of 2010.
Elections. The Republican Party is losing the support of our Hispanic citizens.
If there's anything that motivates Congress, it's the next election. And everyone in both chambers knows President Obama took more than 70% of the Latino vote in November. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
The U.S. Missile Defense Agency successfully tested an anti-missile warhead over the weekend. The test marked the first time in more than 2 years that missiles like the ones at Fort Greely have been launched. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, it sets the stage for missile defense contractor Boeing to conduct a full-scale test later this year.
Boeing spokeswoman Jessica Carlton says Saturday's test of the ground-based interceptor rocket and its so-called kill vehicle, which destroys incoming enemy missiles, was a smashing success, even though the test didn't involve smashing a target in space as it's designed to do.
Getting back to flight testing has been the number one priority for us, and we've been working closely with our customers as well as our industry teammates to get to yesterday's test.
Missile Defense Agency officials declared the test successful because it proved the operability of a new generation kill vehicle that is launched from the ground-based interceptor missile when it reaches outer space. The kill vehicle is designed to collide with and destroy an incoming enemy missile in space. The missile defense base at Fort Greely is the hub of the nation's ground-based mid-course missile defense system. About 25 interceptor missiles are based at Greely. The last time the system was tested, in December 2010, the kill vehicle malfunctioned and failed to intercept the dummy target missile. According to Bloomberg News, the $35 billion ground-based mid-course defense system hasn't successfully intercepted a target missile since 2008. Bloomberg says the system has logged a 53% rate of success during several years of testing. Carlton says even though testing had been suspended over the past couple of years, the system has remained up and running.
Throughout our work and throughout returning to flight, throughout, you know, the design solutions, GMD has always remained on alert. The system is 24/7, 365.
Missile defense officials say they'll test the new and improved kill vehicle in upcoming testing involving a target missile later this year. Bloomberg says 10 of the missiles at Greeley have been fitted with the new generation kill vehicle that was successfully tested Saturday. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
McDonald's has built its brand around serving lots of cheap food fast. But now the company is trying to change its image so customers will associate the massive franchise with sustainability. As KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports, McDonald's is using Alaskan pollock to make its case.
Last week, McDonald's announced that it will stop using other fish and switch to 100% Alaskan pollock in all 14,000 of its United States restaurants. Pollock is served in McDonald's famous Filet-O-Fish sandwich, as well as a new menu item called Fish McBites. With that announcement, McDonald's also unveiled new packaging for its products. The food boxes feature the Marine Stewardship Council's Eco Label, which says McDonald's fish is verified as sustainable, wild-caught Alaskan pollock. McDonald's is paying the MSC to use that label, though they won't reveal how much. According to Eric Gonring, a public affairs representative with McDonald's, this is all part of a strategy to attract socially conscious diners.
We know customers are increasingly interested in knowing where their food comes from and also understanding, you know, what a business does to be a responsible corporate citizen.
Sylvia Edifaw, who manages the fishing boats in the Unalaska Fleet Cooperative, says McDonald's new menu and marketing could give Bering Sea fishermen a boost.
The idea is that with the addition of the fish bites, they'd be using more pollock, and also it certainly isn't going to hurt by putting the MSC label on even their fish sandwiches.
McDonald's started using Alaskan pollock 55 years ago. Since then, the fisheries developed a reputation for sustainability, and it was certified by the nonprofit MSC almost a decade ago. Some environmental organizations have criticized the MSC's standards as being too lax. But regardless, the designation has given Alaskan fishermen an edge over their major competitors in Russia. Alaska's pollock is more expensive but considered more sustainable than Russian fish. But now, the Russian fishing industry is pursuing the MSC designation as well. One segment of the Russian fishery just passed its sustainability study with the lowest required score. Edifaw says that's a big letdown for Alaskan fishermen.
We've worked hard at getting the word out and changing things within our own systems to step up to the plate and be good stewards and be good citizens. And yet the Russian MSC certification is sliding in on the minimum.
Gonring, the McDonald's PR representative, says he can't confirm whether McDonald's would start using Russian pollock in its restaurants if that got the MSC seal of approval. He did say the company is sticking with the MSC label no matter what.
I know that our commitment is to source from 100% sustainable fisheries, and the MSC standard is the one we've chosen.
The MSC is supposed to make a final judgment on the Russian pollock fishery in February. McDonald's new Fish McBites will also debut in February. In Unalaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, making sure the Yukon Quest dogs are ready to race.
When you push on their gums, they turn white. They should turn back to pink in less than 2 seconds. And then I pick up their skin, it should fall down immediately, and his does.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
A plant tapped as a health supplement offers an economic opportunity in Alaska. Rhodiola prospers in high latitudes and has long been recognized by Alaska natives for its medicinal qualities. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, some Alaska farmers are positioning to sell into a lucrative world market.
It sounded like an infomercial when University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension agent Steve Brown gave a talk on rhodiola at a conference in Fairbanks last week. Brown is trying to run a marathon in every state and credits taking rhodiola supplements with improving his performance in two marathons on a single weekend last year on the East Coast.
I set a personal best in New Hampshire, and the next day I ran 4 minutes faster in Maine. Now, I can't say for sure that it was the rhodiola that did that, but for a guy who's pushing 50, to be able to run faster than he did when he was 40 is interesting.
Brown says he's skeptical about trendy supplements, but adds rhodiola has some history to back it up.
It's been used for thousands of years by the natives, but it was really the Russians who figured out that this can help you handle stress and increase your endurance. And it was used by Stalin in World War II during the siege of Stalingrad. In fact, it was considered a Soviet military secret.
The active ingredient in rhodiola root is rosavens. Brown says the compound's endurance-enhancing effect is supported by Russian studies on mice.
Basically, they'll put a mouse that's on rosavens in a bucket of water, and they'll measure how long the mouse will swim. Now, a mouse will paddle until it becomes exhausted, and it doesn't drown at that point. It just floats. So the mice that had been given rosavens paddled significantly longer than mice that had not.
Rhodiola is also recognized as a treatment for upset stomach, depression, and even impotency. Much of the world's rhodiola comes from wild harvest of the plant root in Siberia. And Brown says it's widely used in a range of products from vodka to sports drinks and cosmetics.
In Europe, it's huge. And it's just now showing up on our radar screen.
Brown credits Anchorage doctor Petra Illig with recognizing rhodiola's agricultural potential in Alaska. She's helped start a co-op to promote it. Concerns about decimation of the wild variety in Russia have brought harvest restrictions and spawned rhodiola farming in places with similar growing conditions, including Alaska.
The Arctic and the subarctic is its natural environment. So this is where it wants to grow. So we don't have to do things like finding ways to extend seasons or fertilize it or keep insect pests off of it or keep it warm.
Rhodiola plants take about 20 years to mature in the wild, but farmers have been able to get that down to 4 or 5 by fighting back competing weeds. Brown says Alaska farmers in the Mat-Su Valley, the Kenai, Delta Junction, and Fairbanks are successfully raising rhodiola on a small scale.
There's only about 5 acres in production. We've calculated, though, that once we achieve 100 acres of production in Alaska, it'll be the most valuable crop in the state.
That's because raw rhodiola root sells for about $8 a pound. Brown says tests of Alaska rhodiola show it to have a very high rosavens content. He says that and Alaska's pristine environment may drive premium prices. Longtime Delta farmer Frank Borman is banking on it. He planted 2,600 rhodiola 3 years ago.
I'm planning to plant 5,000 a year until I can see how the market is. I consider it a high-risk project, but so far, everything I've seen, I think it's got a good chance of working.
The potential has also inspired small-scale farmers like Fairbanks' Aaron Forcier.
I have 400 3.5-inch pots coming on this year, and I'm going to start another 1,000 this coming spring. Just jumped on the bandwagon, and hopefully, I have a feeling that it'll be profitable for me and my family eventually.
4CA is hopeful an Alaska processing facility will be up and running for his first harvest in a few years. The Alaska Rhodiola Cooperative is working on the processing issue, as well as fostering a market for raw and value-added products. The UAF Cooperative Extension is pursuing rhodiola research and teaching growing courses. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The latest installment of Alaska Reality TV will feature the small, isolated communities of Russian Old Believers that call the Kenai Peninsula home. As KBBI's Aaron Selbig reports, National Geographic Channel is interested in profiling families who live in the Old Believer villages and are specifically looking for big personalities.
Natalia Livingston is a producer with National Geographic Channel. Livingston says the idea for the show came last summer from an Alaskan who works for National Geographic.
We heard about this community of Old Believers, and National Geographic Channel is very interested in stories having to do with Alaska. So basically we just researched them a little bit and came up with a pitch.
That pitch includes money, of course. Executive producer Lisa Blake told the Homer Tribune that each family would earn $3,500 per episode of the show, which is tentatively planned to run for 3 years. In addition to its very popular show, Alaska State Troopers, National Geographic Channel has produced a couple of programs that have focused on small, isolated religious cultures, like the Mennonites and the Hodorites. Livingston says National Geographic Channel has already made contact with a handful of Russian Old Believers in Nikolaevsk.
So we have quite a few cast members already set, and we're really excited about them. They're just very interesting, fascinating people, very excited to work with us. But right now, we're looking for more people. We're trying to add to the cast.
In particular, the show's producers are looking for large families involved in the fishing and boat building industries. One issue the producers might face when they arrive in Alaska is the very thing that attracts them to the idea of the show, the fact that the Kenai Peninsula's four small communities of Russian Old Believers are isolated. The three small Old Believer villages at the head of Ketchumak Bay, Vaznesenka, Razdolna, and Ketchumak Selo, are particularly isolated. And although the people who live there participate in the broader Homer community, they still, for the most part, like to keep to themselves.
We're definitely aware of that. So far, we've had a great response, and people have been very, interested in talking to us and have been, like I said, very welcoming and very kind. And we've interviewed several fishermen and several boat builders who have taken us into their world and taken us into their, on their boats or in their boat building shops. And we've really gotten to see these glimpses of their lives. So we're just, we're hoping that that will continue. And we're expecting a pretty big turnout, hopefully, on Tuesday.
The casting call will take place at Nikolaev School beginning at 5 p.m. Tuesday evening. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the 2013 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
More than 300 sled dogs have been cleared to run in this year's Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race. KUAC's Emily Schwing stopped by the vet check in Fairbanks on Saturday.
Chattanooga musher Dan Caduce pulls his truck into a warehouse in South Fairbanks as two Yukon Quest veterinarians slap on latex gloves, swab thermometers with Vaseline, and grab for their stethoscopes. The four-time Yukon Quest finisher has 15 race dogs in his truck. They're here for their pre-race checkup. Caduce climbs out and pulls a 63-pound male husky from a dog box.
This is Draco. He don't like females or strangers.
He is from Fort Yukon.
Draco sniffs at the air with his huge gray and tan nose. Sled dogs that come from rural parts of Alaska are often large. Their ancestors pulled sleds and worked trap lines in heavy snow and deep cold. Caduce squats down to comfort Draco, and Yukon Quest Trail veterinarian Nina Hansen moves in for an examination.
I start at the front and work my way back, and I start generally with teeth and gums, and he's nice and pink. When you push on their gums, they turn white. They should turn back to pink in less than 2 seconds. And then I pick up their skin. It should fall down immediately, and his does. He's also, I'd say, a 4 for body condition.
Race dogs are ranked on a scale from 1 to 5. Number 1 means the dog is too thin. A 5 means the dog is a little overweight. Most of Caduce's dogs are ranked as 4s.
And I just feel their hip bones. You shouldn't be able to feel their spine between there. You should be able to feel their ribs. And I can. And he seems like a more nervous dog than some, so his heart rate's probably going to be a little higher than average.
Hansen listens to Draco's heart and checks his paws.
He has big feet.
Huge feet.
He has really big feet.
Draco is definitely large in comparison to other Quest dogs. At 2 years old, he's also young, which is why he isn't microchipped yet. All Yukon Quest dogs are required to have a microchip. It's a tiny radio frequency device with a unique identification number. Hansen reaches for a needle and inserts the chip under the skin on Draco's back.
You have a lot of skin.
He doesn't even wince. The chip is smaller than a grain of rice.
All right, let's scan that and make sure it reads.
Hansen uses a green rectangular scanner to make sure the chip is working. This is the third time she's examined Draco this winter. He ran the 350-mile Top of the World sled dog race in December and the 300-mile Copper Basin in early January. Hansen was a vet for both races. She says he doesn't appear any worse for the wear.
Oh, you know, I want to say his body condition is maybe a little bit better, but he was never thin. They should have more weight on him now because they're doing 1,000 miles.
Hansen approves Draco for this year's Yukon Quest.
He looks great.
And Dan Caduce hefts the brown-eyed dog back into the truck. He reaches for the next one, and the whole process begins again. Nearby, Kathleen McGill surveys the scene. This is her 7th year as head veterinarian. She first started working with Quest dogs as a trail vet more than a decade ago. Since that time, she says race dogs have changed significantly.
The feet were not as good as they are today. There was a lot more lameness. The dogs just weren't as toned and as athletic, I think. What I've seen more recently, we're getting a hound-like dog, and the feet are still really good, but the coats are getting a little thinner. And the dogs they're not thin, but they're more athletic.
Over the last 2 years, mushers, judges, and veterinarians have all voiced concerns about dogs' physical appearance toward the end of the race. Some have finished underweight. A rule change this year requires mushers to carry an adequate amount of emergency food, in addition to what they routinely carry on the trail between checkpoints. Race Marshal Doug Grelio will be watching to make sure dogs stay well-fed this year.
We're going to have a little bit more of an emphasis on the weight issues that some of the dogs have. And a lot of that, the majority of it comes down to communication with the mushers in a timely manner, both from the veterinarians and the officials. You don't wait till the last minute. You know, most of the dogs, you know, they'll get progressively better or progressively worse as the race, you know, goes on.
26 mushers are making their way toward Whitehorse this week in trucks packed to the brim with gear and dogs. The 30th running of the Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race starts Saturday. I'm Emily Schwing in Fairbanks.
The K300 Sled Dog Race brought new international teams to Bethel this year. Team Beringia is made up of 2 teams, one from Russia and one from Norway. They are part of an educational program that is linking students in classrooms across the Bering Sea. Before they left Bethel last week, they stopped into the elementary immersion school and talked about their dogs, their countries, and answered questions from students. The Russian translator was Elizabeth Shea. Sophie Ivan followed along and has this story.
We have visiting mushers who are visiting Bethel from really far away.
The tall guy, his name is Yor, and he's from Norway. And this is Misha, and he's from Russia, right on the other side of the Bering Sea.
Чукотские породы, они отличаются от аляскинских собак.
So Misha was saying that his dogs are Chukchi dogs, and they are bigger.
than the Alaskan Huskies, and they have much thicker fur, and they're meant really for going long distances and for working. They're meant for the cold weather, so they are actually designed for this type of weather and colder. And when they were running the Kuskokwim 300, it started to get really cold at the starting line, and everyone was kind of like, oh, it's freezing, and Michael was very happy because his dogs do very, very well in very, very cold weather.
Your Livseth Olsen.
My dogs are Alaskan Huskies, and they're racing dogs, so they don't have the thick coat meant for being outside in the Arctic the whole time. So I have to take better care of my dogs with putting coats on them and taking really good care of them. But in return, I get a very fast dog team.
Fourth grader Anigak Samson.
How can the musher survive while giving food to the dog and having some food too?
Будет достаточно для тебя тоже.
Не очень понял вопрос. Кости, все такое, я все это стараюсь заготовить для собак.
So he said when he prepares food for himself and for his dogs, most people will kind of give like the scraps to the dogs, the stuff that they don't feed the people. But he said that he always tries to give his dogs, you know, good parts of the meat. He uses his dog team when he goes out, especially to hunt seals. So they'll start really early in the morning when there's like a horizon on the ice. They'll go, they'll get off the dogs and leave the dogs and the sled kind of laying there, and they'll go hunt around for the seals. And he said sometimes the dogs can actually be laying on the ice all day long.
Они потому что более упитанные, чем здешние собаки, и им нужно больше жира давать.
So in the winter time, he goes and hunts seals out on the coast, but also in the tundra, like here in Bethel, he'll take his dog team out and they'll go hunting for caribou and also wolves.
Team Bringia is currently training for the 2013 Iditarod. In Bethel, I'm Sophie Ivan.
Extreme cold has thwarted Minnesota climber Lonnie Dupree's third attempt to become the first person to summit Denali solo in December or January. The 51-year-old told his support crew early yesterday that it was 35 below in a snow cave he had built at the 17,000-foot level of Denali. His crew says Dupree is making his way down the mountain and will proceed as the weather permits. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Tim Ellis in Delta, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Dan Bross and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Aaron Selbig in Homer, and Sophie Ivan in Bethel. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years.
And by
ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2013 PFD, or paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, where every year Alaska Natives from all corners of the state graduate and become engineers, scientists, and physicians. What started as an idea in 1995 is now 1,000 strong. Learn more at ansep.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.